Congressman Mike Boss. How are you, Mike?
I'm great, Tom. I really am. We're, you know, I mean, I think that we're going back to D.C. Saturday for a political show, and I can kind of give evidence to that of what all is going on, and to make a vote, which I'm more than willing to support our Postal Service. As a matter of fact, I've been endorsed by both the union and the management side of Postal, because I know that it is created by the Constitution to do its job. And we have the experts, even Democrat experts, that have said they are very capable of doing their job. And yes, we need to actually look into funding, but we need to rush back. But if you'll notice, we're not rushing back until after the Democrat convention. And then during the Republican convention, they are going to be holding a special committee where they will bring the Post Office General in to question him. And that is all still going on. So, of course, I think that it's wild that Ruth Goldway, who is a Democrat, former commissioner of the U.S. Postal Service, actually, she was appointed by Clinton and then served through both Republicans and Democrat administration. She said that they're perfectly capable of handling election mail. I serve as a regulator for Postal Service for 18 years and under three presidents, and I urge everyone to calm down. Don't fall prey to the alarmist on both sides of the debate. The Postal Service is not incapable. It is still fully capable of delivering the mail. And just so you know, we put $14 billion in cash in when we did the CARES Act, specifically to allow, to make sure the Postal Service can continue to operate with no problems whatsoever through August 2021, including if with the increased vote by mail that might occur. And we have, and they still have $10 billion in loans that are available through the Treasury Department if they get in trouble. See, we aren't saying that. You see, Tom?
Right.
Because if you say that, then it ruins the sky is falling.
All right. Now, let's talk about a couple of these other skies falling. First off, I thought it was $10 billion at the end of July. You say it was $14 billion. I think it's interesting. They were protesting in front of the postmaster's house. They're protesting in person that they shouldn't vote in person. I find that interesting. I find interesting that I went back and started researching when these changes began in the U.S. Postal Service. The article that I found that I thought felt most reliable was dated 2011, Wall Street Journal. The President Obama at the time making the decision to take areas that were not done properly, and when talking about mailbox and where they were, and having them moved out. Now, with that being said, this message just came in. Hi, Tom. I'm not going to use your name. He's a mailman. I know for a fact what he is and where he is. He works for the mail service. The mailbox removal has been going on, like you said, for a long time. Every once in a while, we have to count the mail we collect for every box. If the number falls below a certain level, it is no longer cost-effective to pay for the carrier and the gas to go to those boxes. Strictly a cost-cutting measure.
You do understand, to add to that, that from 2011 to 2016, during the Obama and Biden years, 14,000 mailboxes were removed. Why? Because they weren't being utilized. Now, let me ask this in a sensible manner to the listening audience and to you, Tom. Do you think that there's anyone in this United States that, with our postal service as good as it is, could not mail a letter if they need to or receive their mail in a timely manner?
No. And here's why. I can put mail in my mailbox and the mailman picks it up.
That's right. That's right. And if you're in rural area, you do that all the time.
Yes.
If you're in the town, normally you wait till you drive by the post office or by your local mailbox. But when they're doing the count, it's some real clear numbers. It's like if it only gets 25 letters in a week period or whatever, then they move it to a more efficient place. So, I mean, that's sensible government. That's sensible business operation. And to write. So here's what the problem is. We need to be looking at possibly what do we need with the next COVID bill. But instead, they take and put the shiny ball, the sky is falling, and the post office is going to close down, and they're not going to be able to handle this. And then they call us back in not to deal with the pandemic fourth bill in a bipartisan manner, but instead come in for a dog and pony show, costing the taxpayers the money that we have to travel back to make a vote that's not going anywhere in the Senate, to make a show so that they can claim something that isn't fact.
All right, so the, you know, be honest with you, Mike, the operations post office, man, you and I both know a lot of people that have been there a long time. They're some of my best friends,
right.
And I'll be honest with you. You know, and tough jobs sometimes, too. And, you know, I know people that have gone through their entire lives and retired now. Great thing, right?
Yeah.
This is not what bothers me. If there's any single thing that I cling to as a U.S. citizen, it is the integrity of the vote, because I think it's one of the few things we have left. And that
and
bothers
let's talk about this, the call of vote by mail. First off, the state of Illinois already has and has had for many years vote by mail. All you have to do is request an absentee ballot. What Nancy Pelosi is proposing to do is unconstitutional, because it actually takes the federal government, and then the federal government puts demands and controls on state elections. That's a violation of the 10th Amendment of the Constitution. The Constitution is very clear that each state will handle. Now, they do set the dates for when the elections must be held. They do set certain guidelines, but they cannot force a state to implement programs above and beyond their power under the 10th Amendment. So, by trying to do this and making it sound like that we're in this chaos, the reality is each state has the ability for you to vote. Now, if the federal government would do this, and it couldn't go through the courts in time, but let me tell you, it's not going to happen because it won't pass the Senate. But if they would do it, with the amount of time between now and the election, Tom, you could never put the safeguards in place to keep fraud from occurring. And everybody says, oh, that's not true. Oh, yes, it is. And if you don't believe fraud occurs, all you've got to do, there are certain sections of my district that before it became my district had certain areas where there were people. There were districts, or there were precincts that were voting 110 and 115% in the election of 2012. Folks, there's fraud that goes on out there. And if someone has an opportunity to fraudulently put votes in, they can do that. Or take votes out, they'll try to do that. If
All right.
you don't have the checks and balances in place, the good thing about the state of Illinois, on their vote absentee voting, their absentee voting, from what I can tell, from what I understand, and from what I've seen, they actually do have a check and balance system that you can't just automatically go out and steal somebody's vote.
All right. Well, that's one of the good news here. Just another note, because I want to change subjects, but I don't want to ignore a message that just came in. It says, Tom, my wife was told about a week ago while mailing a small package to our daughter in Chicago that the post office is short-staffed due to large unemployment benefits and was slowed down and it had slowed down the mail. Let's move on to another subject. Even CNN is now admitting that the executive order, president, these unemployment benefits are going to start flowing, but they don't know when. You know, and I find this interesting because the money that you voted on for communities, cities, counties, and the Cure Bill, to my knowledge, not a dollar's been distributed except Chicago and Cook County.
No, matter of fact, it was about 2 weeks ago now that we, as the Republican delegation of Congress, wrote a letter to the governor because we discovered that of all the money that we gave, only 14% had been distributed. Only 14% at the same time, whenever I have my mayors, my county board chairman, different people in local governments all around asking, so they have been negatively affected by COVID. Can I do something? Well, we gave something in the first package, but it's not getting to them. So it's very difficult when we are now looking at the fourth package and they're saying, hey, put something in for cities and local governments. We gave it to the states. The states should have distributed it down in a wise and sensible way. We asked for the governor to explain to us what the process would be and that how it is that he's going to plan on getting that money to our local government.
And when you got did you get one? Because JCAR is still, I talked to Paul Schimpf, he's on JCAR, pretty vague. Other than, you know, that
he did not get a response.
Pushing it downfield was kind of the idea I got from what was going on there, and that it's not going out. And then the limitations were, well, Brad Cole put out a letter talking about the Illinois Municipal League's opposition to this rulemaking is simple. The state is arbitrarily restricting municipalities from using their respective allotments for economic support initiatives as provided by Congress. So the rules that you gave and voted on in D.C. are being ignored by the state.
Right, right. And that's, once again, the power of the state is there. The problem is that we've already distributed the money. So it will still be the state government that has to make this decision. Very frustrating. This was the argument that I had even in some of the negotiations that were going on. I said, this giving it to the administration of the state, which I understand, with no strings attached, is great for those states that have an administration that will do exactly what it is that is wise and helpful. It isn't for those states that don't do that. And I was afraid of the state of Illinois and how they would do that. However, the entire package, we had to do something, and so we sent it to these states to distribute.
Disabled veteran welcomed their, I think, eight maybe veterans this time around to Southern Illinois.
Yep.
They're doing the trauma resiliency program. They meet their service animals here. It's one of the first program here. I started joining Bay Shadone when it was merely an idea and a concept, right? You have been doing something in Washington, D.C. to try to address veteran suicide as well.
Right, right. Let me tell you that what we did was we've got I introduced a bill that has access. It's called the Access to Suicide Prevention Coordinators Act. It actually goes with a bill that was signed into law last year. That was the Support for Suicide Prevention Coordinators Act. And basically what this does is make sure that it would require the VA to have at least one suicide prevention coordinator in each medical center. Look, and the reality is that those then coordinators can work to promote suicide prevention and awareness, identify high-risk veterans, and ensure they receive proper care. Now, this is only, Tom, this is only a step in the right direction. We want to continue to work at this because what we've discovered is of those 20 veterans who commit suicide every day, only six of them have ever even been inside a VA facility before. So we need to make sure from the day they leave their active service, if not before, that what's known as a MAP program explains to them what is available to them in those times when they might feel depressed, overwhelmed, and also, let me tell you something else that's out there that has to be done is we have to make sure that those that truly have post-traumatic stress syndrome and other issues are not afraid that their FOID cards and their ability to own a gun would be taken away from them, because some people out there, quite often our veterans, want to seek help, but they also have family members and children and grandchildren, and they'd like to go hunting, and that's some of their great relief, that they're afraid that if all of a sudden they just go in and say, hey, look, I'm having a little trouble with this, that they're going to try to take away their right to bear arms. And so that's another thing we've got to work on, some kind of wise way so that they know where the help is, to seek out the help. We've got to reduce this 20 veterans a day issue.
Right, absolutely. And here's the thing. Hey, do you have any idea? I wonder if I should ask you what's on the air. do you have any idea when our boys are coming back from the National Guard? Because they were flown to Kuwait. Now they're in Jordan. My understanding and communication with the soldiers there that a missile was fired on that site last week.
Let me tell you that there's still jobs being done over there, but there's also the process by which we bring them home is changed because of COVID.
Right.
My hope is that we can remove them out of harm's way as quick as possible, but we still have to have a presence. You know, there is a group out there that is working against me this election cycle because I know that we have to keep a certain amount of troops in place. They're from the side that says we don't want to have any of our troops anywhere in the world. Well, unfortunately, we're kind of in a position to where you wish we weren't the peacemakers, but the reality is that the best way to keep them off our shore is to make sure that we can control the areas, that those areas are where they would spur up. I don't know on those specific ones.
And stop electing them to the House of Representatives would also be a good thing. Here's another note coming in from the American Monument text line. My son moved, they're about the post office. My son moved 3 years ago to a new address, changed his legal address. We get the mail a couple of weeks back, and there in our mail is the ballot information, and he got the same information at his new address. We're Jackson County residents when it gets to that one. So
that's some concerns that we do have. Okay, somebody receives two ballots. That is an administration problem of the state, and there needs to be a check and balance. Of course, there needs to be someone that signs off to witness that it was you making that vote, and that vote would be counted. You know, I want to encourage everybody to be safe. If you don't feel safe, find a way to get your absentee ballot. But if you are safe, and there's going to be a process, to each of our county clerks will do their job, which is to prepare a safe place for everybody to vote. You can also early vote. So the state of Illinois has been doing this a long time. Everybody's been doing it a long time. Make sure if you see something while voting that you think is out of whack, report it to the authorities, right, so that can be watched too.
All right. Here's one that I'd really want to ask you, and this, because I think this is a great question. I'm not a veteran, a farmer, or a truck driver. Most people aren't. What's the congressman doing for people like me?
Good. I'm glad they asked, because let me explain it to you. Whether or not you are any one of those, you depend on those to provide you, to make sure that food gets to the grocery store, that food is being produced and the chain is going through the right way. If you are a frontline employee, we're making sure that your employer can keep you working. If you are laid off, we actually provided unemployment benefits. Even if you're a 1099 employee, that the 1099 would have been barbershops, beauty shops, masseuses, all of these. Though it took a little while, about 7.5 weeks, for the state of Illinois to kick it in, it did allow you to draw unemployment, which you were never able to do before. If you are somebody who's on public assistance, that public assistance did not leave. We were able to maintain that. If you are someone who has a situation where your child is receiving, which received free and reduced lunches on this time that they were home, we were able to get those free and reduced lunches to places where you could receive those free and reduced lunches. And not only that, then we're also working on the long-term gain. That's making sure that we take off and make sure that our economy continues to grow. If you look at what's happening, though we are at many job losses, the job losses are occurring not because of the economy per se, but it's because of COVID. So we have to move forward, and also we have now forward into the phases where we can actually probably see in the next month or two, maybe a little more than that, one, two, or even five vaccines for COVID that are being tested. Two are in the final stages, two are in stage four, and one is in stage three, and then each one of those are being mass-produced so that once we decide which can be used, you can go ahead and take a vaccine if you so choose to do so. So it is a day-to-day work and operation. I am aggressively work for the veterans. You know that. I aggressively work for the farmers, but I'm also on transportation infrastructure. So we're working to try to provide a infrastructure bill so that you can travel up and down the highways, even if you're not a veteran, even if you're not a farmer, even if you're not all of those things. So it is a all-inclusive. I represent everybody that is in the Illinois 12th District and will continue to do so at that level and try to provide. And if you have a specific problem, you can contact my office, and we can try to help you in any way with what that might be with the federal government.